This is KCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're here in the studio with Hans Tsang, who's an animator and winner of award-winning animator of Japanese manga. Welcome, Hans. Why do you think you were named one of the artists of the year? Aspiring, what was the title actually?
The title of my piece or
The title of the award?
Oh, it's the compilation is called Rising Stars of Manga, and it's put together by Tokyopop. The piece that I submitted was The Little Match Girl, which is an adaptation of The Little Match Girl by Hans Christian Andersen.
Oh.
And, well,
the contest was what? The contest, name of the contest, I mean.
Yeah, Rising Stars of Manga.
Oh, Rising Stars, yeah.
What was I gonna say? Oh,
did you expect to win, I guess?
No, I didn't expect to win. It was really surprising to me because, I mean,
we have with us on the phone also Mike Kiley, who actually was the company that gave out the award, Tokyopop. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Hey, Hans, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, nice to finally meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Meet you virtually.
Were you there at the Book Expo?
I'm sorry?
Were you there at the Book Expo?
Actually, I wasn't, but I heard great things about you. I heard you signed lots of books.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Oh, good, good. Well, you're a talented guy.
Thanks.
so you went there at the award ceremony, Mike?
I'm sorry?
Was there an award ceremony?
It wasn't an award ceremony. It was a book expo in LA, which was a convention for book buyers and sellers.
Oh, I see. Oh, right. So, Mike, why did you give an award or your company give an award to Hans?
Because he makes really good manga. you guys probably, I don't know how much you've talked about the background of the contest yet, but basically we had this sort of nationwide contest and got, you know, hundreds and hundreds of entries and narrowed it down to 20 or 30 or 40 and then a final cut of like 15 or 20, and then Hans was one of the 10 guys who emerged victorious, and the quality of work just kind of the quantity of work blew us away, but the quality of it was even more surprising. You know, it's just amazing stuff.
Was it very detailed, the drawings? Is that how? What do you mean the quality?
Oh, I mean, I guess I can speak specifically about Hans's work in just a second. Overall, in terms of the anthology itself, we really weren't sure what we were going to get. You know, we didn't really know. We had a feeling that because manga was so popular that we might get some really cool stuff, but, you know, there's a real difference between reading manga and creating it, you know, so we weren't really sure. Hans, in particular, in my personal opinion, I think came really, of any of the entries, perhaps closest to what might be regarded as kind of classic manga style. You know, really, really intelligent use of screen tones and really kind of captured that whole feel graphically. There were some stories in the anthology that kind of were a little, in my opinion, were maybe a little bit more Western tinged, a little bit more kind of like Western independent comics, whereas Hans, I think, Hans's tale was just right down the middle of what's classically seen in most parts of the world as manga.
And so, is there a kind of fusion kind of manga that is more American than you think, or more Western, like you were saying?
Yeah, I really believe so, and I believe we're in the process of seeing it evolve right now. It's really exciting. It's evolving through people like Hans, in my opinion. I mean, you've got these kids that have grown up, you know, most of them pretty solidly in this culture, and they've got all these influences. You know, they're into anime, they're into manga and video games. They're also into, you know, all kinds of pop music and graphical influences throughout pop culture, and they're producing this really kind of weird and irresistible hybrid of what's been thought of as manga in the past. It's, you know, there've been a lot of kind of terms that have been tried so far. I mean, I've heard it referred to as like Amerimanga, but to us as a publishing company, it's just kind of it's all just manga because it kind of uses that essential vocabulary, but it's filtered through in a totally different pop culture sensibility.
What is the attraction for you, Hans? Of manga. When did you start getting interested in drawing this, and also, I guess you started reading it first, huh?
Yeah, when I was born in Taiwan, and it's been fed to me ever since, you know, I was 3 years old or whatever. I started watching Hayao Miyazaki films when I was probably 2 or 3, and ever since then, whenever I could pick up a pencil, you know, I just draw manga style characters and stuff. And when I came to America, there was less of that, but pretty soon the show Sailor Moon came on, and I'd wake up for that. It was showed at probably 6 or 7 a.m., and I'll tell you right now that I'm not a morning person at all, so...
What channel was that on?
That was on UPN. That was channel 13, and I woke up for that because... I don't know. Something about it really appeals to me. I like the style. I like the story, the plots of manga. A lot of them seem to have a lot more substance than what I've seen in most American comics.
And how old were you then? 13?
No. When it started showing, I was probably 6 or 7.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like I said, when as soon as I could pick up a pencil, I started drawing anime style, manga style, you know.
And when did you write you develop it more and get more serious about it, did you?
Really not until I won this contest, because ever since then, I've just been drawing for fun, because it's something I like to do, it's something that I'm good at, so... It's just been a hobby throughout my life, but ever since that manga came in, I've been getting, I mean, you called and the newspaper called. It's been become like an actual career path for me.
That's amazing.
Hans is a celebrity.
I know, you become a celebrity. Kind of scary, huh?
Yeah, it's scary.
What was the effect of the Register article?
I didn't know that it was published until... someone came into my second period class at school and showed me the newspaper, and then constantly throughout the day I've been getting some people saying, "Oh, Hans, I saw you in the newspaper," and throughout the day it's like just a bunch of people mentioning that on my website. There was a site address to my webcomic, and I've been getting a lot of emails from fans that have been finding me through the Register.
Are they all over the country, or?
Well, no, it's just Orange County, which is actually, to me, a little more scarier because, I mean, these are people living within, what, a 30-mile radius from me, and they know of me, so. I mean, I've had a website since I was in sixth grade, so I've been used to having people, like, farther away from me, so I'm... Maybe it gave me a better sense of security, knowing that, you know, they can't stalk me. But
you're going to have manga groupies, huh?
Oh, no! Manga groupies. Fanboys and fangirls. Oh, that's all right. That's exciting.
You want to be on the air?
Someone's calling.
You want to be on the air? Okay.
We have a guest on the air. We'll put her on.
What's your name?
Jade.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Do you have a comment?
Excuse me?
Yeah, do you have something to say?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Who is this?
It's Jade.
Do I know you?
It's, yeah, Chira.
Ah! Yeah, this is one of my friends. This is one of my good artist friends.
Great.
She's probably going to enter the contest this year, actually.
Right on. Good luck, Jade.
Thank you. Oh.
Yes.
Can people hear me?
Yes. Yeah, say something.
Okay. Okay. Well, just for like the sake of question, cuz I promised I was going to call in anyway. I was How long did you actually spend drawing that?
The little match girl?
Yeah.
I procrastinated a lot.
I know you procrastinate a lot, but you draw freakishly fast.
Do you work well under deadlines?
I try to make the deadlines, but I mean, I usually put it off a little bit. I make the deadlines, but you know, it ends up making it like last minute. I actually didn't start until probably 2 weeks before the deadline, and I've thought about it the whole time. It lasted for 4 months, like this time they accepted submissions, but I didn't actually get serious about it until, you know, it was close to last minute. And the total time I spent on it was probably, given that I work about an hour a page, more or less, I probably spent probably 24 hours, you know, straight, but not in a row, but, you know.
Yeah.
Somewhere around that time.
That's amazing, Hans. That's really fast.
Yeah, it's amazingly fast.
How do you do it? Do you do it by hand or on the computer? Or
what I do is, the first thing I do, of course, is like think about it. I think about how, all in my head at first, about what I'm going to draw, but maybe a little bit of the script, a little bit of the paneling. Because for a manga, like, paneling is very important because you want your readers to move their eyes from panel to panel in the way that, you know, is best for them. So,
do you come up with a story first, or how?
Yeah. I was going to do an original story first, but the idea that I had didn't really have time to, or not time, but it couldn't fit into 25 pages, because that was the limit. The contest wanted 15 to 25 pages, so I just thought about what I could possibly do. They mentioned some genres in their contest regulations that I could probably do. So looking at that, thinking about what I've read in the past, I remembered that back when I was in Taiwan, I listened to like this little audio cassette of children's stories, and the Little Match Girl was one of them. And it was really traumatizing for me in a way, because it had a sad ending. If you read my entry, you know, it's a story, it's for children, but I mean, it has a really sad ending.
Did you make the ending better or not?
I pretty much stuck with the story, so I'd like to think that it's better like as a manga, but I don't know. It's just my interpretation of it. So that's what I did. I thought about it a little bit. After you know all the brainstorming stuff, what I do is I draw each page as a thumbnail, just like an inch wide, you know, an inch wide, an inch tall.
You draw it by hand?
Yeah, I draw it by hand on just
paper.
Yeah, just a regular size printer paper, you know. Wow. Each page, but really small. So I get a feel for how many pages it's going to come out to, how the panels will look like, the perspectives, the camera angles. It's basically just what I've been doing in my head, but now on paper.
Wow.
So after that, I actually start doing the pages. I do very rough sketches of each page. Usually I try to do the whole thing in like one fell swoop, you know, so that way I could get a better feel for what's going on. After I do that, I look over it and see if it's okay, see if, you know, it makes sense, if anything needs to be corrected. If that's done, I start like the final draft, you know.
Do you do the dialogue boxes there too?
Yeah, I do the dialogue boxes. I usually don't have the script completely like set up until I've drawn it. Most people think that's not a good way, and I agree. Like, it's a little sloppy on my part, but someone's.
Is that I guess we have to drop her. Sorry.
No worries. What was I gonna say?
Oh, you're saying that is it better to have the script worked out, the dialogue?
Yeah, it's better to have the script worked out, but what I do is I have a good, like, grasp of what I want the script to look like, but I don't, like, actually do it word for word until I finish drawing the page. I don't know why. It seems to work better for me, like, to see the characters there and then kind of ad-lib what they're saying.
Because you imagine it first, huh?
Yeah, I imagine it first. So, yeah. I don't know. The script is kind of a lower priority for me. I know that for other people it's higher, but as long as, you know, I have the idea, I have, you know, the grasp of what I want to do,
yeah.
I think that it should be all right. So that's what I did. I drew the little speech bubbles, the boxes here and there on the pages. After I got the pages done, I thought about what I wanted, like, each bubble to say, and just kind of finished it from there.
So do you find that it's easier to write spontaneously? Or, I mean, usually when you do write, like, your novel on the web, the graphic novel on the web, where do the ideas come from for that?
Well, like I said, the script is spontaneous, but for the actual, you know, plot or everything else, it comes from, you know, hours of just sitting or rolling around the floor or whatever, just, like, thinking about it, just having a good grasp of it, you know?
Do you have to take drugs to get...
No! Do I? I mean, maybe caffeine. What kind of
caffeine? I know.
Is that?
You're being doped by Starbucks, I guess.
Yes, yes. I have my Starbucks cup right here. I am anti-drug, straight edge for life.
Right. Do you think in other languages or just in English?
Sometimes I have dreams in Chinese. I mean, it's my first language. But I think I'm better at English.
Do you write the dialogue boxes in Chinese anymore?
No. I'm not even literate in Chinese because I moved when I was 5. So I didn't really have a chance to get a good education
The written part.
Yeah, the written part. Yeah. Yeah.
Do they speak, the folks speak to you in English?
Yeah. No. In Chinese.
Oh.
They speak Chinese at home. I'm pretty good, like, speaking Chinese, but...
Mandarin.
Yeah, Mandarin.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, what are you surprised at the explosion of this pop culture? Since you started, you know, you were the first, right, to set up an online store in the U.S.?
Yeah, pretty much.
At UCI.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I've been in it. I've been in it for long enough now that it doesn't really surprise me. I mean, Hans was talking about Sailor Moon. I'm getting up real early to watch Sailor Moon, and one of the things I told the guy, the reporter from the Register, was that there really have been 4 or 5 waves of these things. You know, and ridiculously old enough to have seen, you know, like one of the first waves in the 60s with shows like Gigantor and Astro Boy and The Eighth Man, and, you know, ran home from school to watch those things as well. And in the 70s and the 80s, there were shows like Robotech, Yamato, and then in the 90s, you know, things like Sailor Moon and Ranma, Evangelion toward the end of the 90s, and then all of the stuff, with each wave, it kind of crested further up on the shore, and you know, the internet happened, and video games happened, and this influence just had become, there was a lot of foundation to it, and it just became more and more powerful, and got to the point with this most recent last 5 or 6 years where it's really become a very solid part of even Western pop culture. You know, I mean, the obvious examples are things like video games, which was largely a Japanese industry from a graphical point of view. And you see movies, you know, like The Matrix was basically a live-action anime, right? So it doesn't really surprise me all that much because I've seen it happening for quite a while. You know, I've seen it creeping into Western pop culture for a long time.
Who's buying it? Who's buying the stuff you publish?
All kinds of people. You know, it's literally.
Or are ages?
All ages. It's the core customer for a publisher like Tokyopop. Our manga tends to skew a little bit more shoujo than shonen, meaning it appeals to the kind of girl stories more than boy stories. Our core customer tends to be like 13 to 24 female. But it all depends on the series. You know, you have things like GTO and Initial D that are mainly guy series. You also have people who are well into their 30s, 40s, and 50s who have been collecting anime and manga for you know, 10 or 20 years.
You talk about people in the U.S.?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And it's all kinds of ethnicities as well. You know, one of the sort of myths that people who aren't real familiar with anime and manga have is that, oh, you're only selling it to Japanese kids or Korean kids or Chinese kids, and that of course is a real solid core audience, but it's expanded dramatically beyond that. Hans may be too young. Hans, have you ever been to an anime expo?
I have. I started going to the anime expo here in California in 1999. I've been going every year consecutively after that.
My first anime expo was, I think, like 94, and it was predominantly male. You know, teenage guys, you know, just getting together to watch anime and, you know, tend to a hotel room and, you know, having their weekend festival. You go now and it's almost like 50-50 girls and guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, it's just like a big anime party, you know, and it's white kids and Chicano kids and black kids and Asian kids. Mm. And so I see it as really kind of having, broadened dramatically over the past 5 years or so.
Do you mean the same thing when you say manga and anime? Is there a difference?
Oh no, manga is the manga are the printed.
Right.
The print is the printed word.
Okay.
Anime is basically a Japanese term for cartoon, a video cartoon.
Video cartoon.
They're the same style, but just like the distinction between a book and a TV, you know.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
So one's visual. Oh, I mean one's animated.
Correct.
On the screen.
Uh huh.
I see. Most
animated anime they started out as manga and then they were adapted into anime.
Do any of these address political issues necessarily? Or
some do.
Yeah.
Yeah, some do. Some there are a lot of one of the biggest traditions in anime is sort of the post-apocalyptic story. You know, things like Akira and Evangelion, and through the working out of those post-apocalyptic themes, they often make very, very pointed commentaries about things like, you know, the role of technology and science run amok and genetic engineering gone bad and, you know, all those kinds of things. But you know, one of the really interesting things that I see happening in manga, especially even more so than anime.
Yeah.
There's an incredible diversity of manga. We're publishing, for example, for the first time this summer, a couple of shonen ai titles, which are basically kind of boy love stories.
Yeah, right.
And those are not really written for.
They're for girls, actually.
They're written for girls,
right,
in Japan
yeah.
And the audience is girls. But it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of audience embraces the books here, because they're not really very realistic, and they're written definitely from a very female perspective. But
the guys look like Western, you know.
Yeah.
They look so Western. The guys look like Western, you know, jocks or something. Don't you think? I don't know. I've just seen the ones in Hong Kong. They were selling a BB series or something,
right,
and they
right.
were in Chinese. They were selling them by the street vendors at the Star Ferry, which is you know, the of ferry that goes across the harbor, and right there on the floor they're selling stacks of them.
Right.
This is years ago, and about 5 years ago, I think, and they were all being translated into Chinese, and I guess republished in from Taiwan probably.
Right. There's a huge market in Hong Kong and Taiwan for manga.
Yeah, and so do you think it's girls that's going to get it here? I mean, by that?
Those particular stories, the initial audience for them will be girls, because most anime and manga, when it's first introduced here, tends to be bought by a very fanatic group of core fans. Sometimes they're referred to as otaku. And the otaku community, who is aware of shonen ai as a genre,
otaku.
it tends to be female, because the stories really don't appeal in Japan at least, to a gay audience. Now, whether that will change in the West, I think remains to be seen, because those stories really haven't been published here before.
Yeah, I think, were there problems with censorship? Because I heard that some of these comic books were not allowed to be sold at Japanese stores.
There's all kinds of variation in any kind of manga, heterosexual and homosexual. There are extremely graphic comics that do have to be sold, you know, all wrapped up, and you know they can never see the light of day. And there are other kind of comics that just deal with sexuality on a more kind of thematic level, you know, not a graphical level.
Have any of your books been seized or challenged?
Not really. We've had books that we've had to ship into some of the chain bookstores shrink wrapped. A title like that Hans may be familiar with. We just published a title called Battle Royale, which is based upon a very famous Japanese live action TV show, a movie rather.
There's all these DVDs of it, huh?
Yeah, and it's extremely violent in both a violent sense and a sexual sense. You know, pretty graphic rape scenes and a lot of very graphic sort of student to student violence. And it's proved to be very popular. But the retailers were very sensitive and would only take it shrink wrapped. And the funny thing about that is, of course, the first thing anybody does in a bookstore is they rip off the wrapper to look at it, and then they don't buy it. They just stick it back on the shelf.
We got a dog-eared copies.
I'm a good kid.
Do people steal them from stores, you think, because it's so popular now? What do you think?
I don't doubt it. I'm sure some people do. I'm not one of those people, but, you know.
You know, we get letters from kids all over the country, and there was a letter from a girl who was like, my favorites are the ones from like the 10 or 11-year-old kids in Topeka, Kansas. And they write you, I got this one recently that said, oh, you know, I really love Tokyo Pop Manga. I can't wait for the books to come out every month. My favorite series, I think she said it was like Cardcaptor Sakura or something. And I go into Borders. My family is very poor, so I go into Borders every month and I read the new volume, and one day I hope to be able to buy one. And it just sort of broke your heart, you know. All these kids out there that are like frantically streaming into bookstores all over the United States reading this stuff, you know.
Well, I guess people, that's why they buy the coffee there. And the sofa for you to sit there to read.
They're asking you to.
It's a library. Are any libraries buying it? I'm a librarian, so I was just interested in it.
Library market is huge. Because, you know, one of the this probably doesn't apply to you, Dan, because, you know, academic librarians are sort of a different crew. But
no, we have faculty interested in pop culture.
The librarians that we run across are, they basically go nuts for manga because they're so interested in anything that appeals to boys. Librarians are so desperate
to get them to read.
And boys just, you know, culturally just don't read as much as girls, and boys do read graphic novels, and so librarians are just going nuts for manga.
So you think this reaches more like I know Latino culture, there's a lot of kids grow up reading, you know, comic books. Do you think that's you were saying that people that go to anime conventions are pretty broad now? Do you think, Michael, Hans, do you think it's your friends, among your friends, is it all different mixes of people?
Yeah, it's among different mixes. I mean, the person who just called here, she was like Indian or Middle Eastern, one of those. All kinds of people, you know. At the Anime Expo, obviously, they're... obviously predominantly Asian still, but big mixes.
On your homepage, you had this dialogue with yourself, I guess, huh?
Huh?
On your homepage, Slime Mansion?
Yeah.
You said your stick figures were sexy. You heard that?
It wasn't dialogue with myself. It was a conversation with someone.
Oh, okay.
The person just called, actually. You can embarrass her.
Oh.
We were just it was about a page that I did for a comic. It's a comic that was offered to me, a job to draw comics for quite a sum of money, and
They wanted...
You were commissioned.
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly. And they wanted me to do a few sketches first to see what I'm capable of before, like, they actually hire me for what they want to do.
Oh, man.
And one of the pages, it had zombies in it, and I'm not too fond of zombies, so I just kind of grew tired of sketching. So eventually, one of the panels, the zombies became stick figures. I was just like, blah, I don't care anymore. Just, you know. So, and my friend wanted to see, so I just sent her a link and showed her like the page I was working on, and we were just discussing the stick figures because I don't know, it was late at night and we had nothing better to do.
That's your blog.
that's my little blog.
Well, we're listening to Subversity on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. You can listen to the web, to the show on the web, kuci.org. The number to call if you want to chat with Hans or Mike is 824-5824, area code 949. And we're talking about manga mania in America. Mike is with Tokyo Pop, and Hans Zhang is with his own creation.
Freelance
artist on the web, and webmeister. Do you, Mike, is it a billion-dollar business, really?
No, manga isn't. It certainly could be worldwide. In the U.S., anime, which is a more mature market than manga, anime is about 5 years ahead of manga, anime is traditionally thought of as being about a $500 million industry right now, about $500 million. Manga is probably more like 75 to 100 million in the U.S. So it's in Japan, of course. I don't have the current figures from Japan, but it's much more sort of mainstream.
Yeah.
But it's growing. It's growing just by. I mean, publishing, as you probably know, Dan, in your position, publishing has been stagnant at retail for a number of years now, and one of the graphic novels are growing as a category incredibly quickly. One of the amazing things to us is that there were two things that happened this spring that had never happened before in the United States. The first was that the Rising Stars of Manga anthology that Hans is published in, that book actually was like the 31st best-selling graphic novel in the country several weeks ago.
Wow.
And when you think about that, it's going up against not just other manga, but it's going up against Batman and Spider-Man and all of these really kind of, you know, sort of more established things. And these are just, I don't mean to use the word just pejoratively, but these are authors who had been previously unpublished,
right,
who the public wouldn't really know, and they were published in this anthology, and it's sold really well. The other thing that happened a few weeks before that is we published a manga called Chobits, and not only is Chobits a very popular manga and anime series, 1 week in April, Chobits was like the 30th best-selling paperback book in America. And think about what that means. That means that for that week, Chobits outsold things like Stephen King backlist, you know, or Tom Clancy backlist. I mean, it's incredible
amazing
when you think about stuff like that.
But do you think of your own firm as an independent firm, or how do you think of it? As an indie press, or what?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure that we see ourselves in that light so much. I think we're kind of more an entertainment company, and we're basically interested in taking this stuff, this pop culture stuff, mainly from Asia, although we're also developing our own content
and distributing it here.
And just bringing it into pop culture here. I don't think we have the same sense of like artistic or editorial zeal that's necessarily associated, in my mind at least, with a classic kind of indie press attitude. We kind of have that attitude because we're a niche publisher and we're on the outside looking in, and we like sort of, you know, counterculture stories and art and subject matter that pushes the envelope a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, of course, you know, because we're also an entrepreneurial company, our goal is to sell more books. And to do that, we need to, you know, kind of push the envelope and expose manga to a wider audience.
When you were at UCI, did you sell more to online to other people than to people here?
Toward the end of my stay at UCI, the online business had become huge. As you mentioned, we were the first people in the country that really had a sophisticated online anime store, and this is back like in the mid-90s, and that business grew to be very large. If you remember the early days of alt.at, because you probably do, because you were like instrumental in helping us pick out like the magazine selection there.
I picked some alternative magazines.
Yeah, absolutely. The original focus of alt.at was very much a combination of like alternative music, alternative magazines, and Japanese pop culture stuff.
Right.
Over time, the year or two that the store was there, the Japanese pop culture stuff just kind of, it just sort of overwhelmed everything else. Just because people would drive from Riverside and Los Angeles. And so although the online percentage of the business was bigger, it also had a very healthy kind of foot traffic as well. Those were fun days.
So why did you leave then?
It just became apparent that this was something that I wanted to do with a little more freedom and focus on the outside. There were a lot of advantages in doing it in conjunction with an organization like UCI. But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, it was kind of a weird thing for a college campus to be into, and and probably wouldn't have happened under the normal course of events. And I sort of met some people who were of like-minded who thought we could kind of take it to the next level. So
Hans, do you want to get, you said you now feel like it's a career. What do you plan to do with it?
Well, before I really didn't have an idea of what career I wanted to do. I didn't want to be a doctor. I didn't want to be a lawyer. I'm a lazy person. Yeah. So I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And after all this happened, you know, it's really sparked a plug in me. Does it make sense? You know what I mean? It's something that I like to do. And if I could get paid for it, if I could, you know, make money, like if it could support a living, then I would obviously just take the opportunity, because I don't think that there's going to be another job like anywhere that's going to suit me as well as this.
Would you want to go to art school? Or?
Maybe. I've been thinking about it, but I'm still not sure. I've still got my whole senior year to try to decide what I want to do for my future. But definitely I want to be involved with something in the arts.
Are you taking art? Is there any art stuff in your high school that you can take advantage of?
They have art class from year one to year four, and I haven't taken any one of those because I've heard that the first 2 years they just basically stick something in front of you and tell you draw this, draw that, you know, just to give you technical practice.
Mm.
But
so you don't need that already. You already know that.
Well, I don't think art is something that needs to be taught, you know? It's something that you need to practice. It's something that you have to have experience with. I don't think that talent is necessarily something that you have to have for art. I think it's a lot of dedication. Like, I've been drawing for a long time. Maybe I'm good, maybe I'm not. But it's because I draw every single day. If you see my notes in class, I pay attention sometimes, but the other times, you see little drawings on the side.
Doodles.
Doodles. I just draw every chance I get, you know?
Do you ever get in trouble? Because I had friends who went to school in Huntington Beach, for instance, and they would draw somebody with a gun, and then they were kicked out of school for that day. It's just ridiculous.
No, I generally draw stuff that's more tame and stuff, and I get A's in my class. So,
but do they inspect your draw? Do they? The teachers come by and check up on what you draw, and no.
No,
they don't. They're not like spies or anything.
No, I'm a good kid, so they're not worried about me.
But if somebody was drawing manga with weapons and stuff, that people would get, you know, scared, right, with Columbine and all that, probably.
I could see how they could, but I haven't heard of any problems of that nature at my school.
Okay.
So
Yeah, I hope they're not. We're publishing a manga later this year. It's called X Day. That's basically the Columbine story.
Really? Oh. Wow.
Yeah, that, a lot of manga is really violent. So.
Yeah. So what kind of manga do you like, Hans? I mean, what that you draw? How would you describe what you draw? I guess.
I generally adhere to more fantasy related, but also mixed with kind of like daily life. I like manga that have psychological undertones.
Hmm.
Like Evangelion, it has like a lot of psychology involved, philosophy, psychology, whatever. And it really interested me in that aspect. Not, I wasn't really interested in the robot combat or whatever. So I think
so it's not the violent.
I'm not too fond of the violent. But, I mean, it could accompany as long as it accompanies a good story with, you know, a good theme, a good, you know, a message, moral, whatever. I generally like that kind of story.
Are your characters male, female, or both, or adults,
both,
or
like,
kids, or I mean, all what age ranges?
I generally try to stay within my own age range because it's what I understand most.
Yeah.
I like to create characters that would be believable, so I try to do something that that I understand the most. So most of my characters, they're within like 14 to 20 at most. Some older, but like the older ones, the ones that are farther from my age range, they tend to be a little less developed. I mean, I try, but I just focus on the ones that are closer to my age.
Do your parents, do you show it to your parents what you draw or no?
Not usually. They they kind of find out on their own, and I don't know. I'm a little embarrassed.
You're shy.
Yeah, a little shy to show my parents. I don't know why.
What was their reaction, Hans, when you won the contest?
I don't know.
You didn't tell them.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, I won a contest. Okay, bye. my mom was happy about it. She eventually she was. At first, she wasn't like too sure what exactly it was, but I gave her a little bit more details about the contest and what I won, what's going to happen, and then she seemed a little more excited.
But whose choice was it to buy a violin, to spend the money on violin?
It was mine.
Oh.
Yeah, I bought a violin with, or part of a violin with the 500, and, you know, the other part with the, you know, it was a $1,000 violin. Like,
huh.
a lot of people think, that's actually really cheap in terms of violins go. Some go for, one of my friends has one that is like $8,000.
Wow.
But I just started 3 years ago. The violin that I had before was, I don't know, probably $100, $200. It was really cheap. So I've just like raised it up a little notch for myself.
So it sounds really good. It sounds
really good. My violin teacher says it's about 70 or 80 years old, and it's got a little blemish on top of it, which probably dropped the price value. But it sounds really good. I think that the reason it's only 1,000 is probably because it looks kind of ugly, but it's a music instrument. The only thing that really matters is how it sounds.
Yeah, sure. So you didn't want to spend, in the paper you quoted as saying you didn't want to spend it on something else that didn't last or something?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to buy like a PlayStation 2 or a video game or whatever, but then I realized, hey, I played this for like a few hours or maybe 50 hours, depending on what game. And after that, you know, I stopped playing it. And violin, I mean, I've been doing it for 3 years, like, continuously. I could do it for, 3 years more, 3 years more.
Yeah.
So I decided to spend it on that because it will indefinitely last longer.
What would your folks think about a career in anime, then?
I think they would be okay with it. My parents aren't like the typical Asian parents who are like, be a doctor, be a lawyer, you need to make tons and tons of money and never sleep and get lots of stress. I think my mom's a little more lax. She generally wants me to, you know, be happy with my life and just do something that I want to do, as long as, you know, I support her when she gets older.
Is your dad a doctor? Or
no, mom? No. My dad, what does he do? I think he's a programmer.
Ah. So, do you feel like you're pretty independent? You can do your what interests you and stuff?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, my goal in life is to, you know, just do what I want and try to be satisfied with what I can do. Yeah.
Does you have other other brothers, sisters? Or?
I have a little brother. Oh. He's 9 years old.
Is he into this too? No.
Drawing?
Yeah. Sorry.
I don't think so. He draws a little bit, but I mean, it's just the typical little like stick figure doodle and stuff. I don't know what he wants to do. He's 9, so yeah. What can he do? He's not important. Let's not talk about him anymore.
Sibling rivalry there, huh? So, do you find, Mike, do you find when you give awards, is Hans typical, or is he different from the people that you've given awards to?
Well, we didn't have a lot of experience because this was the first contest. I think all of the people, Hans, you may know this, but I think all of the people who won were between like 15 and 21. I mean, they were all really, really close in age.
No, actually, a lot of them, I checked their birthdays. One is 15, like 17, and the rest are 22 and above. Some of them are close to 40, actually.
Really? Oh, okay. Well, I stand corrected then, because the ones that I was familiar with, I thought they were more in the teenage range.
Yeah, there are only two teenagers. The rest like were probably past college.
Right, and I don't think it's really apparent that they fell into any kind of ethnicity in terms of big breakdown. There were let's see how many one.
So not all Asians.
No.
I think there were only two, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's interesting.
I mean, the surnames were, you know, looks like one Hispanic surname, a couple of Asian surnames, three or four girls, five or six guys. So I think it was kind of all over the map, just like, you know, just like the people who read this stuff.
Although you were saying only two girls, huh?
So no, is it mostly a lot more.
A lot more girls.
He said four or five.
One,
actually.
Two.
Oh.
It looks like three of the 10 were girls.
Hmm.
Yeah, something like that.
Did the,
yeah, that sounds right. Uh-huh.
Is it mainly you're saying that now the anime audience, you know, the convention audience is mixed, is 50-50.
It's mixed, yeah. Definitely.
But in terms of purchasing, Mike, do you think people will buy it? Is it still more males?
It depends on what you're talking. If you're talking about anime, it is still more males.
Mm.
The cliche about anime is that it's a lot of kind of, you know, round-eyed, sexy girls with big busts and lots of panty shots and,
right,
you know, big robots and that kind of stuff.
It's not very good for
so on the anime side, it's definitely guys. On the book side, it's much more skewed toward females.
But do you draw girls with big eyes in? Is that a, I mean, what, why is the big eyes? Why?
Well, you could put a lot more detail into big eyes.
Oh,
I think that's why I do it. Actually, my characters range in eye size. Some have like almost normal size eyes, amazingly enough. Some have figures. It really depends on the character's personality.
Do they look particular ethnicity, or is it all kind of, it's fantasy, so it could be anything, right?
Well, sometimes I give them like some distinct ethnicities. Sometimes, like they're. I've been trying to go for a more realistic approach to anime recently.
Mm.
You mentioned earlier that when the manga that you saw had like a Western look.
Yeah.
Were you saying that they were drawn like American comics or something, or?
This was Japanese, but they were drawing the guys like they look Western. The boys.
Really,
you know?
I think manga and American comics are really starting to blend, because, I mean, American culture is fascinated with Japanese culture, and Japanese culture is fascinated with American culture.
And so, I think a lot of maybe Japanese girls were kind of attracted to these Oh yeah. These boys, right?
You know what? One of my friends, his brother went to Japan to try to learn Japanese and also to teach English to Japanese students. And he mentioned that, like, he's Caucasian and Asian girls were all swooning over him.
So, yeah, especially if you could speak Japanese. Yeah.
Yeah. Or actually, no, they wanted him because he spoke English.
I know that's kind of discrimination because if you were, you know, as Chinese, if you went over there to teach English, they wouldn't want you because they would prefer, even though you were practically born here, you know. So there's some kind of this thing that you want real American or something. I don't know, whatever that means.
Well, basically, the point is, I think that it's really started to, come together, you know.
The culture,
The styles and everything. The like a lot of manga, they don't even have any big eyes in some manga that you see, some anime, and I think that they're just trying to go for a more realistic look now.
Hey Hans, did you ever read American comics when you were growing up, or did you only read like manga?
I read a few. Like I read I watched the Superman and all those cartoons that were shown on the WB before.
Right.
And I watched the Batman movies, like the live action, and some of the animated features. I read a little bit of Spider-Man, a little bit of X-Men.
Did you ever read, like, Spawn or any kind of independent stuff? Or?
No, I haven't read Spawn before. But,
I was just curious.
How about Giant Robot, the, you know, Asian American magazine? Have you heard of it? Giant Robot?
No, I haven't, actually.
Yeah, that's a great magazine.
Yeah, that has a lot of, you know, drawings in it.
Mm.
And it's from Los Angeles.
Oh.
It's kind of a cult thing, too.
Mm.
Yeah, they've spoken at classes here. The editors and stuff.
I think they actually have a store now on Sapporo.
Right, they started a store, right.
Yeah.
They gave this huge talk at the Cross Culture Center a few months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
cool.
And it was packed. Yeah. Yeah, so there's this undercurrent here, you know, obviously. Yeah. Being, you know, huge school here with lots of Asians. And so, I mean, that was, in that case, that was mostly Asians at the audience. Yeah. So it's actually changed a lot in a way since Mike's been here. More so, I guess, more Asians. But, So, how do you, I mean, if your folks, you think they wouldn't mind then, huh? If you were going to be a freelance kind of artist or even work for a company or whatever, or do whatever, you know, in this field, I mean.
As long as I'm making decent amount of money or something. As long, you know, as I could make a living or just, I think they would be fine with whatever I did.
How about, Mike, when you commission these books or people submit manuscripts, I guess, to you, are these mostly independent people or are they people you commission, I mean?
It's kind of a mix. Most of our business still is just taking existing licensed properties from Japan or Korea and translating them and localizing them. But what we're getting increasingly into is exactly the kind of sort of creative development that you're talking about. Some of it comes in over the transom. Some of it comes in like from this contest. We may begin working with a few people from this contest. Some of it, you know, are just artists who have heard about us, who you know, will sit down and try to develop a series with. So it's so new for us, Dan, that I don't honestly know that we have a real coherent process built for it yet. But it's really kind of exciting because we're as I mentioned before, Hans is coming up at just an amazing time in this art form's evolution, you know, and he's going to be one of the pioneers, and he's going to be one of the guys who, if he chooses to, can really help define what this thing looks like and where it goes, because it's a real sort of open horizon right now.
I know there are some. I bought comic books, I guess, for faculty here from another store, I guess, another place that has an online outlet. I can't remember the name, but they publish a lot of comic books that are drawn by Asian Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the series or anything about it, but it was. So I think there's actually I mean, people seem to know about it, you know. I mean, there's this whole, these are basically subculture material, right? But do you think it's basically going mainstream now or not yet?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a loaded question. I mean, going mainstream can mean just reaching a wider audience, and I certainly think that's happening. Going mainstream can also mean, you know, classically sort of a dilution of the original sort of passion and artistic integrity of the product, and I don't see that happening at all yet, because you know, there just aren't the commercial pressures yet that require creators to compromise.
Yeah.
I think when you look, I mean, one of the things that we're developing right now, for example, is an original series called At Large, which is a hip hop manga. It's set in the hood in LA.
Yeah.
And it's this really cool story that's rendered. This is an African American artist who chose to work in the manga style because he felt like it was the medium that would allow him to express his vision the best, you know, and that's really kind of a fascinating thing to have happened, you know.
So it's hard to see like Warner Brothers picking that up.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. It's there hasn't been that huge kind of crossover yet, and maybe when that happens, then everybody will start churning out, you know, derivative Drek. but at this point, you know, it's really exciting because it's just talented people working in a totally new medium, you know?
Hans, yeah.
I was going to say that I think that a lot of American comics and cartoons have been kind of adapting to manga style. Like, a lot of people say that the Batman Beyond cartoon has been resembling a lot of manga, especially like the style of the characters. It's still a little more simplistic, but like you could definitely see that it's crossing over the style and stuff to American cartoons.
Hey, Hans, have you heard that, you know, Peter Jackson, his company that did The Lord of the Rings, he's actually going to, his company is going to make a live-action version of Evangelion.
Oh, really?
Can you believe that?
I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah,
that really
could cost
something.
Like $200 million if they do it right.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, on that note, I guess we have to, it's after 5, we have to end this conversation. Yeah. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Hans, for being on the air.
Thank you.
Good luck, Hans. I think you're a talented guy. I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Dan.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Keep in touch.
Bye.
That was Mike Kiley with Tokyo Pop. He's a vice president there for communications, I believe. And with us in the studio is Hans Zhang. Same kind of last name as mine, but no relation. and he's an award-winning manga artist with his own website, and it's the website is
slimemansion.com.
Slimemansion.com. Slime for green slime.
Yeah.
Okay. And
word.
And not that word. Slime Mansion. This is Dan Zhang signing off for Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.